Thanks, Cliff.
Just doing ER positive and ER negative, when you want to evaluate whether an endocrine responsive tumor receives any benefit from chemotherapy, ignores the biology. We know that an ER-positive tumor could have 2 or 3% positive cells and the rest are negative. And I think if you really want to ask the question, and I'll bet you if you did ask the question, you'd find the answer that I'm going to guess. And that is, if you looked at those tumors that were ER-positive and PR-positive, or those that had high ER, truly endocrine-responsive tumors, then that 10 and 8% would go away.
I agree, and I think you did it with 8814 and we showed did. It as one of your secondary
right,
endpoints.
Why doesn't Don Barry look at that in this analysis?
I'll tell you why, and this is the issue. The answer is that we're still relying on all those local labs, and as you know, many of them don't even do PR once they get an ER result that's positive.
You're kidding.
No, that's a national issue as well. Many of them only do PR when the ER is negative so that they don't supposedly miss a false negative. It's unbelievable what's going on out there.
Hal? There's never been a guideline anywhere to say people should treat anything based on PR status if the tumor is otherwise ER positive. So, I mean, I think that, again, we are now bringing to the discussion a level of biological interest that has been lacking. What's really appalling about these trials is that 100 years after we know that ovarian suppression is effective for breast cancer, 25 to 30 years into the overview analysis, 30 years into ER testing, we're still doing chemotherapy trials for both ER positive and ER negative breast cancer with unplanned subset analyses that you can't imagine why they're even unplanned, asking the same question when we know that these two different groups of patients probably need different therapies. And so that's the challenge for interpreting all these things retrospectively.